So the beauty is always of doing a podcast is that, you know, you can go from here to here to here to here.
Yep.
But I think now what we would like to sort of concentrate on is we got to the point where, you know, you'd had this terrible time in your life, a horrific time where you felt the point where you needed to take your own life, and it was where you went from there. And obviously then we kind of explored your relationship with your children and how you felt about yourself and the pressures that you were putting on yourself. And you'd realise that, you know, it was your own battle that you were having.
Everything was in my head. It's like with the teaching, like I said, martial arts has always been my thing. You know, just to train was, to me, a bit like, it changed everything. No matter what everything was being thrown at me, training, everything leveled me out, this and that. Suddenly, I was going into class, and rather than concentrating on the martial arts and what I was doing, I was counting numbers, and it was money. And then that changed it. So I didn't stop teaching. What I did was like, right, I'm going to do this because I love it, not because I'm going to earn money from it. And then I got rid of the shit, if you like. And, you know, that sounds a bit bad. Some, they weren't all shit, but it made it so I could concentrate on the people I wanted to teach. I could enjoy teaching again. And it restored, I don't know, call it purity, beauty, whatever. It made the martial arts back to the martial arts, not a living. And that was a big changer for me.
I think a lot of people, again, like I keep saying, will relate to that and understand where your head's at with that. But obviously, you know, you are a family man. You are.
I missed what made me successful in the first place. I was taught by some of the best instructors in the country when I was young. Over time, it's been watered down. It's been changes, this and that. I was lucky enough to be around when it. You know, I've been around a while now. When I was teaching, I loved it. It was important for me to teach the way I was taught and so on and so on. And I really enjoyed doing it, which is what made me successful. The minute we get all these masses coming in, they want you to make it softer, this, that, and the other, which I started to do because I needed to pay my mortgage, when actually my service I was providing, I was getting more money, wasn't as good as what I started with.
So there was the battle in the head in the. Again, I think so many people can understand that and relate to why you would want to change that, because martial arts, from what I gather from you and from what I gather from so many things that I see, it's so much more, isn't it?
It can be. The problem is a lot of people, it's not as regulated as it should be. A lot of people see it as a very good way of making money. You know, some of the classes, I had 40 people in the class. You know, you're talking 40 people, £6 a head for an hour's work. Do the math. You know, I can do that three times a night, five nights a week. You know, there's money to be made. So a lot of the principles and the way it should be done goes out of the window for money. And I found myself doing that, and that's not who I am. That's not okay. And then I was having people with money that were bringing their families. You know, I didn't just two kids, I had adults and all sorts, coming in, flashing the cash, expecting me to bend the way I'm teaching and bend the standards to suit them because they're paying bills.
How do you, just to explain this, because you know, I've never done it, I don't know it, do you know, a lot of people that listen won't know it. How do you mean in bend the rules? What advantage was that to them?
Right, so I could do gradings, I can give people belts, I can award people belts, and you'd have, you know, this one family in particular, he had a few children, he needed to get a TV, he had quite a few children, you know. And his kids were shit, and he was really shit, but he really, really wanted a black belt. So he would try and push me to put him in for exams and belts and this and that when he wasn't up to it. But if you don't do that, we're going to have to quit. And there's eight of us. Well, that's quite a lot of money to lose twice a week, every week, and this and that. And it's like, but you're not good enough. And that's you get a lot of that sort of stuff. And then other people coming in, well, I don't appreciate the way you're teaching, you're doing this, you're doing that, I'll bring my kids out. The whole time you're thinking, well, if you take your kid out and he does that, and I'm going to lose money every week. And it becomes an issue where, as before, it has been, do you know what, go fuck yourself, mate. I never once graded anyone that didn't deserve it or anything like that. But you do find yourself actually biting your tongue and not being quite the way you should be because you're worried about losing students for the money.
It makes you wonder where their mindset was, though, as to why would they want to do... Why would they want something...
You'd be amazed.
...that they're not deserving of?
You'd be amazed what people do. You know, I had one woman come in. really nice lady, actually. She came in, she was a black belt, and she was joining the class. And she'd been a black belt for 2 years. And then we went to spar, you know, sparring's like fighting, training. Yeah. And she'd never done that. It's like, hang on a minute, you're a black belt. Oh, we didn't fight for our black belts. It's like, hang on a minute. It's like dry swimming. It's bullshit. You can't do that. And a lot of that goes on because it's a money-making scheme.
I just can't get my head around what is the benefit to somebody to have that status when they can't actually physically
really?
Do it.
You say that, but you look at modern society, things like, you know, all these YouTubers and Instagram people and this and that. They've all got celebrity status, but they've got no talent.
So that kind of transpires into what you're saying with martial arts.
Well, a lot of people walk around, oh, I'm a second down black belt, I'm this, I'm that, when actually you're shit, mate, you're fuck all.
Interesting.
A lot of people come into martial arts classes, and karate's, it used to be kickboxing was terrible for it. Karate's pretty bad for it now as well. It's not regulated quite the way it should be. You give a kid a black belt, you can charge them a fortune, you know, lessons every day. Mostly they're living, you know, it's a parent living through the kid. Get them in every night, tell the parents, oh, they're really good. They're really, really good. We'll have them in every day. We'll push them on, we'll do this, we'll do this. Get them a black belt, whatever. And people pay to be able to brag about their kid doing this and that. And it happens a lot. Adults too.
Wow. This is the society that we're in, eh?
I'm not about that, to be perfectly honest. I don't like that, you know. I've got a friend, actually. I was chatting to him recently, and he wants to start doing karate. And I said to him, look, we can do it. I'll work with you. But I'm going to be an absolute shitbag when it comes to your gradings. You're not getting your belt for nothing. And he went, I don't want it for nothing. That's rare.
Yeah.
I've also had people come in and go, well, how much is it going to cost to get my black belt? Fuck off, mate. See you later. Yeah. I'm not doing that. It's like every village has a world champion kickboxer. Every village has one.
As you say, like you wound that down a little bit from what it was because of the reasons we've just talked about. And then you were building more on your security company.
I pushed on the security firm. Really, really started working with that. The money was ridiculous. You know, I was getting paid for all sorts of silly shit. You know, I was getting paid to answer the phone. You know, at one point I was working for quite a famous A-list celebrity. She had an accident. Because they didn't want me to work with anyone else, they paid me to bodyguard her to be on call while she had a broken leg and wasn't on set. So I actually got paid for 12 months without meeting this person just to keep me on hold for them.
Wow.
During that time, we pretty much holidayed in half the UK. We were going away all the time, and I was getting paid. As long as I answered the phone when I was supposed to, it wasn't an issue. So I'm thinking, right, there's money in this. So I pushed that.
And how did that go? Bearing in mind that we spoke earlier about the mindset of a celebrity, in that, you know, they had loads of money and then they were quite depressed and weren't happy.
This particular person was on the up in a big way. I'm not going to say who it is. I think you might know, actually, but I'm not going to talk about it.
So many people guessing right now. So many people trying to work it out.
She was on the up, doing really well. She had an ex-boyfriend that was in the industry. And he was a shitbag, for want of a better word. And they needed somebody to make him go away. What's the word? I'll get the job done. I don't always necessarily do it the right way, but I get the job done. So they wanted somebody that was going to bother him enough that he was going to go away. So that was fine. And then she broke her leg. So had the initial meet. Didn't see her for another year, but got paid for a year. Every week got paid just to answer the phone when she was ready to come back into work. So I was doing that. While I was doing that, I was building up security, like mostly set security, a bit more bodyguarding work, that sort of stuff. Just doing well with it, doing well.
Were you getting other people to work for you?
Yeah, I wasn't training people. I was picking lumps to come and work for me that could do the job. You know, we're not a bunch of pretty security people, and we're also not a bunch of ex-coppers. You know, we're very far from that, if you like. So we were doing what we needed to do, looking after more and more people. I was getting paid every week, and then it changed a little bit. It's like, right, we need to put you on monthly pay now.
How do you mean it changed a little bit?
Well, it was weekly pay. Oh, we're just changing things up. We need to go on to monthly pay now. Oh, hang on a minute. Fuck.
So were you paid by a company?
I was paid by, mostly management agencies and stuff like that, occasional production company, but I was paid by people to look after people. Sometimes it was a celebrity, sometimes it was their manager, sometimes it was, it depends on the job. I started working for one particularly big company, and they wanted me to do all sorts. I was out every night of the week with these guys, I was traveling all over. They had me doing lessons for people that I didn't really pick it up at the time, but they had me teaching actors about knife awareness and some of it was being used in films, like how to hold a blade properly. So I started teaching martial arts to people as well as working as a bodyguard.
Did this take you like all over the world, or was it pretty much UK based?
A lot of it was UK based. There was a bit of travel involved, but mostly UK based. And it worked fine for me because I had young kids. There was one point they wanted me to go and live in LA for 18 months. And it pretty much got to the day before we went, and then the plug got pulled because something horrendous happened to my client.
You can't say?
No.
Obviously.
No. I also had another very, very high profile client from LA that came over here, and I was paid to look after him over here, and that lasted all the 2 days before they went crying back to LA, which was great because I got a contract for a year, I got paid for a year.
They were crying about, not because of your fault, because of the...
No, literally the day I was supposed to start, they went home. So that was fun.
Have you ever thought that, like, you know, the stories that you're telling and the things that are happening and the people that you're looking after, etc., have all got drama? There's a lot of drama that surrounds everything, like, that you do.
Not all of it, but some of it. But the drama is what you talk about.
Right.
Okay, so I've had some celebrities where I've literally gone and I picked them up, driven them home, and I've just sat in the lounge. 2 days later, I'm still sat in the lounge, bored out of my fucking tree, while they're writing or doing something or practicing lines. You know, I've had other celebrities, and one in particular was quite funny. He was staying at a hotel in London. And we'd sit outside the hotel room. I was there for a weekend, sat on a chair outside a fucking hotel room, literally playing, because it was before iPhones were only just coming out, so I'm literally sat playing Snake.
Playing
Snake on a fucking Nokia for 2 days. You know, I got really good at Snake though. You know, there's times like that, but you don't want to talk about that. You know, same guy. I must have bodyguarded him maybe 15, 20 times. People ask me about him. People that know that I was looking after him. What's he like? Well, one time I picked him up from the airport, we went for a quiet beer, and then I listened to him shagging two prostitutes for 2 days. That's the story that comes out, not the fact that the 15 times before that I sat there playing Snake.
Wow, yeah. Because that is what people want to know about. And that is what you will remember from that experience.
The amount of times I've just turned up at work, sat in the car, walked somebody to a car, sat in the car, and, you know, sat doing nothing for 2-3 days, whatever. People don't want to hear about that.
Do you feel like you really want to share these experiences?
I don't really talk about them. Like I said, the book's a thing that I was never going to do that we did. Another podcast, something else I was never going to do that we're doing. You know, I can't name names. I wouldn't name names anyway, because that would be breaking somebody's trust. I can't name names. You know probably more than you should, because we're mates, but that's how it works. You know, it's like with the whole, I read a bit, because I still haven't read the book myself, but the back of the book, you know, gangland enforcer, this and that. I did get involved in some shit I wasn't supposed to be. We don't talk about that stuff, but now suddenly people are interested. But you have to talk about it in a way that you can talk about it without actually, you know, it's just a random situation. It's totally mental for me. You know, you said, oh, you're looking forward to this. Nope, didn't sleep last night, been panicking about it all day, fucking hate doing it. But people seem to like the end product.
Yeah. And also, but like I said to you, people are getting stuff, you know, something from it. They are learning stuff from it. They're relating to it, and then hopefully, you know, coming out the other side. And I'm hoping, and so like we keep sort of discussing, is that I hope you're understanding how far you've come. And you know, you'll go down and you'll say something 1 minute, and then you'll turn it. I don't do it. You turn it and go, this is what I've learned. This is what I've understood.
People see me a lot differently to the way I thought they saw me. And especially from, like, there's a couple of people that have read the book that are friends of mine, and I think we touched on this before, that have rung up and gone, what the fuck? And then a few of the same people have listened to the podcast and they've gone, you know, Jesus, you know. To me, a lot of this journey, whatever you want to call it, God, it sounds wet, doesn't it? It makes me sound like a right...
Life is a journey, babe. I'm telling you right now, it's a journey.
I'm not chanting with you. But, you know, people say all this. One thing this whole podcast and book thing has made me realise is actually my upbringing wasn't normal. Nothing I've done is particularly normal.
Do you know what? We're going to keep this in, because what is the most funniest thing is when a dog, you know, when you're doing a podcast, life is real, and you thought you'd lock the dog away.
I did shut the door. I don't know how she's come through.
She's clever. Absolutely clever.
But no, what's got me is the fact that everything's been so random with my upbringing, but yet so many people can still relate to it. You know, got half the people going, oh shit, I can't believe that happened. And some of the people going, well, something similar happened to me. And you go, oh, okay, fair enough. That's got me a little bit. And some of the random people I've become friends with since doing it.
Which is nice, because these people are doing it for the right reasons, I would think, rather than, you know, sort of just random people that you've met along the way that need you or that think that they know you. They're actually knowing a lot more about you.
I've met some right random people as well, so...
That again is what life's journey is all about, and that's what makes it so special.
Somebody, I don't know if I told you this, so somebody saw the front book cover, and they're a friend of a friend, so they realised it was me. And the next thing I know, he's got this picture of him holding a gun, with like doing the same pose like on the book, but instead of the stick, he's got a gun, and he thought that was the best thing ever. And I'm going, holy shit, he's not from this country, my dad, so they have guns over there, and it's perfectly...
Oh, thank the Lord.
But I was like, well, what the fuck? The way it affects people is just random.
It really is. Well, let's hope that, you know, people gain a lot from it, that it is very inspiring, and that, you know, people don't have to feel alone. I think one of the big things with so many of the things that we've discussed and so many of the things that people have come forward to me to talk about is that when you're going through the scenarios that you're going through is loneliness, or the fact that you feel like I'm a drain on this, or people are better off without me. It's the loneliness and the not willing to talk. So let's hope that this inspires this, because you're sat here with me and you have a willing to talk.
Yeah, I guess. You know, you do say about the drama and stuff, which I am noticing, it tends to follow me around. Now, I don't know if that's because I'm loud or just I'm one of those people it happens to, if that makes sense. That's something I'm still trying to figure out.
I don't think it's either of those.
Really?
I don't know. I'm not a therapist, but, you know, I just think sometimes, you know, what you put out, you get in, you know, so...
Maybe. But no, I wouldn't call it loneliness. I suppose the feeling of isolation, but I quite like the isolation a lot of the time, was pretty huge. And actually seeing that a lot of people can relate is different. That was kind of comforting in a way. But the other thing that's really got me is the fact that my upbringing was so different to everyone else's, because I suppose everybody has their normal. Until you realise that's not normal, it's quite hard to actually get your head around what's going on.
Yeah. And like you said before, being able to kind of ration with how you act to certain scenarios, how you react to certain things, actually understanding that and going, well, yeah, you know, that wasn't... I mean, what is normal is the big question, but certainly what you went through, and certainly what a lot of people that have been listening to this and that have said, you know, I took this from that, that isn't normal, and it isn't sort of a standard way. So you are going to be affected from it. And the fact that you can kind of rationalize that now in your head has got to be a bonus.
A little bit. Like I said, you know, I've noticed that I didn't see it before. My autism has played a massive part in forming me as a person. A lot of it really, really good stuff. Some of it quite negative. You know, that's been an eye-opener. And doing the podcast, like I said, after the first ones came out, one of my friends rang me, and he's known me since I was about 13. And he went, I didn't realise you're autistic. I was like, well, I've never hidden it. He's like, I just thought you were a bit fucking weird. I was like, oh, fair enough. You know, but it also, like I said, you know, my son sees it as a superpower. It's helped me train. It's helped me build a lot of shit. But it's also caused me quite a lot of problems as well.
Because of the lack of understanding there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, like I said, there's a lot of stuff that really winds me up. That people look at me like, what's your issue? To me, it's huge. And to them, they're going, well, and that's quite a thing.
But there's a reason as well. It's called a spectrum, in the fact that some people are here, and some people are here. So people handle things in totally different ways. And I think hopefully now we are going towards more of a society where people aren't just autistic or they aren't just ADHD.
People are autistic to a degree. But to me, like I said, if it wasn't for the autism, I'd probably be dead. You know, my son had a right go at me a few weeks ago. He's living not far from here. He's in quite a rural place. It's not as rural as where I grew up. And I'm giving him a lecture about you're lazy, you're this, you're that, and blah, blah. And he turned to me and he went, Dad, yeah, but you know, you. And I went to him, I lived in a rural area. I did something. He went, yeah, but I'm not autistic. And I went, yeah. And he went, well, I'm just bored. And I was like, you little bastard. Because I couldn't argue with him. And he's living out of town. He's bored. He's a good kid. He could be doing more to help himself. But then, you know, at that age, we all could have been. And he just looked at me, and he used it against me. I was like, you little shit.
Yeah. So. That's a bit naughty, that, isn't it?
It's funny, though. I told him off and had a good laugh when he wasn't there. So.